So welcome everybody to the Christmas edition of the Deep Reinforcement Learning. Are there any questions at the beginning? Who would like to ask something? So as I said, this will be a Christmas edition, meaning we will be like, I will be talking about some latest advancements, specifically in trying to outperform the human baselines in all games in the Atari environment. It will not be part of an exam because it's complex and there will be a lot of details which we will not be able to get into, so we will more get like a general overview. And also, unfortunately, I don't have any slides prepared. We were ill for some time at home, so I wasn't able to make it. So we will use the original papers. I still plan to create the slides later, but as it's not part of the exam, then my motivation may suffer to do it. But at least we'll have the recording. Yep. So what we need to start with is like what is missing. Like when we talked about R2D2, I showed you that there are something like five or six environments where the R2D2 approach is not good enough, not strong enough to actually come up with a solution which would be either superhuman or would actually do something. Some of these results were catastrophically low. To get some idea of how this might look like, let me show you maybe what the results would be. I think it should be here. Okay, so like this, probably. Yep. So this is one of the environments. This is the Montezuma Revenge thing. You have like a character which can fall off. And you can do like a lot of things. And now I have destroy the skull so I can go further and I can jump. And now at this point, I actually got the first reward, this 100 thing, but it still is quite a long time before I'm able to actually get somewhere. So at this point, we unlock the door, so we got something more. But generally, the rewards are very scarce in this, I would die if I would hit these blue. I didn't want to demonstrate. Right, so this is like an environment where the rewards are actually very far off. Like it takes a lot of time to actually see them or get them, which is one of the reasons why it's so difficult to come up with a good solution, because you need to do a lot of exploration, but you don't have anything to drive the exploration, right? Or I don't know, there is the skiing, for example, the environment where you like go down the hill. The returns which you observe in the bottom left corner here, they are just like the minus one for, or minus one and a half for each time frame. And the fact that you go through the gates is not reflected in any way on the rewards until you pass all of them, right? So there is something like 30 gates or so. And now you don't get any feedback whether you go through the gate or not until you finish the whole course. Right, so now when I'm getting closer, we got the results. And now these results, they include the information about how many gates we missed, but it was like extremely, extremely far away. There is also, for example, this Private Eye game where you have this car and there is a guy there. And generally, you can get some very small rewards. Ouch. You can get those by catching these criminals in the windows. But at some point, you can obtain some specific item. I still didn't get it, but if you go long enough, then I think it's here, right? So now you can see that I have got this gun in the bottom up corner. And now, if you go a very long distance to some specific place and you never get hit by anything, then you will be able to score a lot of points because you carried the guns to the place where the guns needed to be. But if you get hit through it, then you will never really find out. You will just lose. Oh, this is still not it. You will just lose the gun, and that will be it. So it's actually quite difficult to see or to observe the effect of that happening, right? So now I got there. Now I got, as a human, you can see the guns here, so it probably makes sense to carry it here, and you can see that the rewards increased dramatically here. But this is extremely difficult to find out if you have no other way, no incentive to actually solve it. So that's what we want to solve, to come up with agents which will be able to solve these kind of environments. For that, we will first come up with another way how we can estimate the returns. If you remember the retrace algorithm, then in the retrace algorithm, I will try to write it. Hopefully, I will do it correctly. So, in the retrace, how we, oh, in the vtrace, sorry, this is the retrace, but in the vtrace, we estimate the return in some state S to be the vs plus, and now we have got some number of time steps. I will say, let's say that this is st, so let's go over I. And now here we have the gamma, lambda. Okay, let's do it like this: gamma and the lambda, lambda j. So this lambda j for j from 0 to I, times the raw I of the temporal difference error in the step I. Now I am quite sure that I have got some I plus one minus mistakes here. So if we go from zero, then this is to zero. This is fine. This shouldn't be here. So this should be minus one, and this should be t plus i. So hopefully, this should be fine, right? And this temporal difference error is the v or the reward which we got in the t plus i plus one, plus the value gamma times value estimate in the s t plus i plus one minus the value estimate in s t plus i. Even 2 years before, now you can see that I already included the important sampling ratio only for this I plus one state. So the rest of them are hidden in the traces lambda. Now, even 2 years before this algorithm, a paper describing the so-called retrace approach came up. And the retrace looked like this. The interesting thing is that the retrace is based on the action state action value function, and it defines another Bellman operator R, which works like this. Okay, so we will do the update. We'll update the Q values by taking the original one and then computing the expectation with regarding to the mu, where the mu is the baseline policy, is the behavior policy. So what we have here, gamma to t, then the multiplication of factors from 1 to t. And here it's something which looks a bit like the TD error. So it's the reward plus gamma times the value estimate in the next state, right? So it's like the Q learning way of estimating the value in the next state, minus the Q value for the ST and the action 80. So this is what the so-called retrace algorithm does, and it can be of course used to train the to compute the value which we can then use to update this Q value using a mean square error. And now there are various versions of this algorithm depending on what these C's actually are. So these C's can either be directly the important sampling ratios, and if they are, then this is just the regular important sampling estimate, which has high variance, of course, because these C numbers can be tens or hundreds or even thousands. The interesting choice is that these C's can be just the probability of the target policy, right? So in the sampling ratio, we divide them. So if we are in the on-policy case, then this ratio is 1. On the other hand, if we just take the target policies, then this is actually the different formulation of the tree backup algorithm. In the tree backup algorithm, we were able to learn off-policy without knowing the important sampling ratios. And that's because we just use these pi's. Of course, it's possible also to add lambda. And if we add lambda, it's also like a eligibility traces version of tree backup. But if you just ignore the lambda for the time being, then it's not difficult to see that this is actually the same algorithm as we discussed in the tree backup. Because in the tree backup, we consider the expectation with the difference of this one action which we actually took. Right, and the action which we actually took will be subtracted in the next time step. Right, here is an expectation over all the actions, and in the next time step we will subtract the xt plus 1, at plus 1, and if you think about it, it actually means that we are computing the expectation for all the actions but the one taken as the expectation, and then we use instead the sampled one for the action which we did take. So this is just a weird preformulation. But the retrace algorithm is actually a different thing. And in the retrace algorithm, these C's are a combination of lambda, so it's lambda, truncated lambda recurrent, and the minimum of 1 and the important sampling ratio. So this is something you might have feel to be familiar, right? Because this is the important sampling ratio, but clipped so that it is at most 1. And now with this clipped version, they actually prove that for any it's a contraction, so that it's a way how you can learn in an off-policy way. And they prove that actually using C's, any C's, which are between 0 and this important sampling ratio, or the real one, that this algorithm converges. Right, so anything between 0 and the real value, and the clipping makes sure that this product doesn't grow large, right? So clipping this to 1 has the same motivation as in the V-trace to make sure that this multiplication doesn't increase the overall variance. Now, in the paper, because it's 2016, they prove all the things exactly, but we actually don't need to prove the things exactly. We can just see that this is actually like a specific version of the V-trace algorithm. Now, like in the retrace, what they do, they have the QSTAT here, right? Well, the expectation with respect to the behavior policy, that's exactly V, right? So they have only Q here, but you can easily have V here if you want. And now, what they do is they prove that the algorithm works if this CS is somewhere between zero and the important sampling ratio. So what we can do is we can separate or split this CS into two constants, lambda S times the important sampling ratio, where the lambda S is between one and zero, right? So we can separate them in these two terms, and then use this this raw S as the important sampling correction, and this lambda we can consider it to be a trace, right? So because they say, oh, we work for any values between zero and the important sampling ratio, then you can imagine that we are doing the off-policy correction using the important sampling ratio, and then they are cutting the traces with the lambda so that their coefficient is smaller than zero. So this is actually the same, right? Because these are all the previous time steps, the gamma is still the same, and this is the their CS, and if it is if their CS is smaller, then we hide it inside the traces. And now what's missing? Well, here the reward is the same. They estimate this value function using the Q-learning thing. So they compute the expectation of the action from target greed policy. And here they estimate this V, ST plus one, ST plus I, using the Q value estimate, actually. Right. So this A was sampled from the behavior policy, but they want to estimate it for the target policy. So this is the reason why they need this correction. Right. Well, for the reward, of course, but also for this to be an unbiased estimate of the value function in this given state. Right. So in the end, it's not that that different. And when we do the correction, we need to make sure that this part is actually a good estimate of the value in the given state, but with the target policy and not the behavior policy. So that's the retrace algorithm, and that allows training a deep Q network using these off-policy correction. The good thing is that if the target and the behavior policy are the same, then the all the CS are just ones, and we can learn and we can benefit from actually using 50, 20, a lot like very large number of experience, which is not true, for example, for the tree backup, because then in the tree backup, if these target probabilities are not one, but they get like diminish, then they will like cut the traces, and we won't be able to learn. From very long experiences. So there is a nice table here, which like shows you the various trade-offs, right? And the trade-offs are, the variance of the estimate, whether it will converge, and whether you can use like full returns in the on-policy case. So if the these two policies are similar, if you can actually benefit from the full episode returns if the traces will not be cut. So for important sampling, you can use like the full information, but the variance is high because some of these constants can be very, very large. With a tree backup, it's the other way around. The variance is low, but we cannot use four literals because if this target policy is smaller than one, then it will cut the traces for us, even if we don't want to. So even if we behave the same way as in the behavior policy, then we use the future rewards in smaller and smaller way. And then they claim that their retrace version has the best possible properties from all the words. So it converges, it's low variance estimation, and it can use full literals in the on policy case. So this is just a technical thing which we need to see because we will use it in the algorithm. And so now let's get to the main paper the first of the two papers, which describes the never give up agent. And the main motivation of this paper is to come up with a way how to learn on these. They call it hard exploration games. Do we have the list somewhere? So they consider the six hard exploration games, which were investigated by the previous some other previous studies as well. The skiing is not here, but skiing is a specific case. And so that's the main goal. And the thing is, we need to find some way to motivate the agent to perform exploration. The reward signal is so sparse that by itself it's not enough, right? It's very difficult to randomly get some reward. So to have a chance without any reward to really go down, ouch, jump correctly, jump over the sky. It's difficult, and if you see nothing, as a human, you kind of see the key, so you want to go there, right? But in the without this meaning of these symbols, you see that you want to get the key, then doing this randomly is extremely unlikely. Similarly with the guns, when you see the gun and you see the writing guns, then you understand that maybe you need to combine those, right? But for a computer, it's not that great. So they need to come up with some other way how to motivate the agent to do it. And what they do is they reuse the idea from sometimes called the curiosity learning, right? In the curiosity learning, you learn by performing new things, right? If you do something new, you are curious what will happen, then maybe that's a good thing, right? If it doesn't make sense to repeat the things which we have done for a long time already and didn't see anything positive coming out of it. But the good thing which you might want to do is you might want to do new things. So it's curiosity-driven learning. In this context, they propose to add two so-called intrinsic rewards, the rewards given by the environment that are the extrinsic rewards, and they there are these RTE, right? So that's what the environment gives us, and they want to augment it with these intrinsic rewards, which will mimic this curiosity-driven approach. They'll be combined together by a constant called beta, right? And they will, the beta will define whether we actually want to mostly use the extrinsic rewards or the curiosity driven ones as well. So first let's talk about what these intrinsic rewards should be. So generally they should visit states which we haven't visited before. That's what we want to do. Their rewards will satisfy these properties. So during one episode, it will rapidly discourage visiting those again, right? So in the same episode, standing still and not doing anything will be discouraged quite quickly. There will be a similar effect but across the episodes, and that will be slower. So when considering multiple episodes, that if you have done or got to the same state over the episode for a long time, then you'll be discouraged immediately. So even without repeating inside the episode, you'll be discouraged, like just getting to that state, because you've got to that state in many previous attempts as well. And now this, these two points, they will be not based on the state itself, but only on the aspects of the environment that are influenced by the agent. This is an important thing. Like sometimes the environment, they change automatically, right? So for example, in this Montezuma Revenge, you can see that the skull is rotating on the bottom. So it seems like it's a new state, but I actually have not done anything, right? So even if the states look different, because we didn't do anything, then all of these states with the rotating skull and the moving platform would be considered the same from this point of this intrinsic reward. So we will need to be able to actually like get a representation which will ignore these automatic changes in the environment and instead consider only the influence of the agent. So to show you how these rewards look like, they will actually have two components. One, which will take care of this visiting the same state in one episode part, and the other component, which will slowly discourage the visits to different across episodes. All of these components are shown here on the figure. So this red part, it's called an episodic novelty module, and it will influence or it will encourage us to do new things inside one episode. So it works actually quite trivially. We use this embedding network to get a reasonable representation of the state from which we can extract the information which are actually influenceable by the agent. Right, it's called a controllable state in the terminology of the paper, we will keep all the controllable states throughout the episode. So whenever we do a next step, we will just store that like a memory that oh, we actually were in this state, right? And then when we get a new state, what we will do is we will find the k nearest neighbors. So we will find the most similar states in this memory and use them to get reward. The reward will be the higher, the less similar experience, the less similar states we actually visited in this episode. So that's the episodic novelty module. We have an explicit memory, and if we are repeating the same state over and over, then we get penalized. So that's one thing. The second module is the long life novelty module. So this module works across different episodes. And what does it do? It gets the state of the network. So we somehow need to learn what are the states which we visited, but in long ago, we cannot really save all our experience to one large mega buffer and then hope that that would be enough and we can just like keep all the experience. Like we need to do it somehow differently. We need to remember which states we visited, but in some different way. So what we do is we use, what's the name, random network distillation. So I just want to show you what, okay, so I, this to be somewhere here. I know how it works, but I wanted also to show you what the name it has, but I cannot, find it actually, but it must be here somewhere. Okay, I'm just ignoring what the official name is. What does it do. I think it's random network distillation, this R&D. We will start by a random network. So G will be a randomly initialized network, which gets the state and computes some output for it. And what we will do is we will create here another differently initialized copy of the network. And we will train one of those networks to mimic the other one, right? So we have this random network, which gets like compute some values for the given state. And we will try to mimic this behavior by a trainable network, right? So if we visit the same states over and over, then these updates to this network will be able to actually converge or to get to the predictions generated by the random network. Okay, now I can see even the number. So this is the random one, and this is the prediction one. So this is the one which we will actually train. And this happens altogether with training the agent at the same time. And then what we do is here we compute the cosine similarity of these two vectors, which will tell us like how well do we actually know this state in the long term period, right? If we have visited this state many times, then the error on this specific state should be low. So we will get some discouragement from visiting the state. If this is like a new state, then because this network is just a random one, then the matching this random behavior is extremely unlikely. So we will say, okay, we haven't seen this state. So we will get an encouragement. And these things are actually multiplied together, right? So here we get the episodic reward and like the inside the episode, and this is the outside of the episode, right? So this alpha t is like the long lifelong curiosity, and we make sure that the lifelong curiosity is in 1 to L range. So we encourage at the beginning to the, like visit the state if they are new through the whole history, but if they become known, we will just like not do anything. This will just converge to one, and that will be it. Yep. So that's two of these modules, and they depend a lot on this embedding network, right? So how this embedding network works? Well, we want to understand the parts of the state which are controllable by the agent. So what we do is we embed the time step, the state or observation in time t, the observation in time t plus one. So we embed them using the same networks. So it's like a Siamese network architecture. We concatenate them, and then we try to predict the action A, which got us from XT to XT plus one. So it will extract information from the environment, which is useful in predicting the action. So that's, it means that the outputs of these, they are the same, they are the identical network, which has different inputs, will be the, so the output of these embedding networks will be such a representation, which is useful for predicting the action. So that's the part of the state, which was actually influenced by the agent, by the agent. So there are some technical expressions here, formulations to actually show you how we will compute the episodic intrinsic reward. They say, I haven't read the original paper, that some people like already thought about how to change like counts into bonus rewards. So generally what we want to have as a reward is one over square root of the number of visits to some state, something like this. In a sense, this looks quite similar to what the UCB does, right? In the UCB, you also have some visit to some count, but here we have the logarithm of the time. So maybe it's not a good analogy, but like, it seemed to me that kind of makes sense. So if we haven't visited it, then it's large, and the more we visit it, the less bonus we get from visiting the state again. Now, instead of the counts, we need to like get some kind of a similarity. So what we do is we use a kernel, which will measure the distance of the state and the case nearest neighbors. And the kernel which we use is the inverse kernel with some epsilon. So these are the technical things you can find in the paper. With the long life curiosity, we so what we do is we train the model using the mean square error, and then somehow get the result from the mean square error itself, right? So I said it's a cosine distance, but it's not true. It's like a normalized mean square error. So these are the main ideas. So what we do is we add another reward, which will reward the agent by doing new things, both in one episode and also in the across the time steps. So let's look at the results, or not at the results yet, but at how we will train the agent actually, right? Because what we want to do is we want to train the agent which combines the extrinsic rewards and the intrinsic ones with some factor beta. And actually, it's not obvious what the beta should be. And for some environments, maybe we want to use a lot of these intrinsic rewards. But for some other environments or some dense reward environments, we might not want to use it at all, actually, right? So what the authors propose, they propose to train several Q value estimates for several number of betas, right? So what we will do is we will train a mixture of Q values for various degrees of exploration, or various degrees of this internal curiosity-driven reward. So they use n number of betas. One will be zero, right? So beta zero will be zero, which means just extrinsic rewards, and beta n minus one will be some constant beta. The default which they use is 0.3, which means like a lot of curiosity driven estimates, and then they will consider various values in between. If you want to see which, then here is the graph. So there are a lot of values which are very close to one, and then we will quite quickly go up, and there are the values which are very close to 0.3. So these are like extremely exploitative policies, and here are extremely exploratory policies. In order to train several different Q values, what they do is they use this universal value function approximator. We haven't really talked about it. This is a nice series of paper from 2015 by Tom Scholl, I think. But in a sense, it's trivial. Our Q network will be parameterized not just by the state, but also by the beta. Right? So the network will get S, it will get beta, and it will predict the values for all the actions, right? So it's parameterized by this degree of how much do we want to actually use the intrinsic reward. It will actually also need to get the intrinsic reward, but at the same at this time, we'll just consider this to be parameterized by this degree of exploratability which we want to use. So that's what we will train. We will have agents, like we will generally use R2D2 as our baseline. So we will have a lot of agents, and different agents will have these different versions of betas, and they will then send it to the replay buffer. So in the replay buffer, we'll have a sequences of, I don't know, 120 transitions, and we will also have the version of like the value of beta which the agent used to generate the experience. Yep. Other than that, we mostly use the R2D2 architecture, but what we do is we actually use the retrace loss, right? So instead, because we will now be training from using agents which are quite different from each other. They have different policies. So the off-policy correction is now more important than it was in the end step version, where we had just one specific greedy policy, right? But here we the performance of the agents varies much more. So we use this retrace loss to allow us to actually perform the off-policy correction. Now, for each beta, we will also have a specific gamma. So for the degree of explorability, we also add corresponding discounting. And the idea is that if you want to explore a lot, then we will use like a small discount. Meaning, if we are exploring a lot, we are not looking too far from the too far in the future, right? So when we do a lot of exploration, we have a smaller discount factor, and the less exploration we do, the more into the future we are actually observing. So either we so we will have n number of different configurations, and for each beta, we will also have gamma, and they vary the gamma between 0.997 and 0.99. So it's not such a huge difference, but there is one. So that's how we are going to train it. So the new thing compared to R2D2 is that we are considering multiple policies with different exploratory and discounting behavior, and we are using the off-policy retrace loss to do the updates. So let's look at the results. So first, there is like a synthetic experiment which shows that this intrinsic reward actually does something, right? They use the funny random disco maze environment. It's like a maze, and the walls have colors, one of five colors. And in each step, the colors of the walls change randomly, uniformly, right? So it's like you have really on the disco, and every wall just changes color in every time step. And what they do is they just observe the number of different states visited. Also, if you like hit a wall, if you get to a wall, then the environment stops. So if we computed or used this episodic novelty module without actually extracting the information from the states, but using the full states, then just standing still would give you a new state in each different time step, because all these colors of the walls, they change all the time. However, so that's like this green line and this blue line, right? If we do nothing and we have bad embeddings, then nothing will really happen. But if we use this embedding from this action predicting network, then you can see that network actually, or that this intrinsic reward will become effective, and the agent will actually explore more and more, because that's what the intrinsic reward does. It gives you a plus one for each state which you haven't visited yet, but only considering the going in the correct places, right? Not going into the walls. You won't get points by the light changing color. You get points by visiting a point which you haven't visited before. Yep. So this is just an experiment showing that it actually works. So now let's get to the other results. So generally, the training is the same as in the R2D2, and the differences are the retrace loss, the intrinsic reward, and the different number, larger number of agents. So here we can look at what the results look at the dense reward games. The dense reward games are the ones which you usually looked at. That's the all the games where you get the information immediately. And here are the hard exploration games, this set of six games. So first, in these dense reward games, apart from this result, like everything is very similar, not exactly the same, but quite similar. And that's because all of these experiments somehow deal with adding this intrinsic reward, but that's actually not important for the dense exploration games. And this one case is without actually the extrinsic reward, right? So this is what you get by doing the curiosity only, right? Just the curiosity driven. So that's not much for the dense reward games, but for the hard exploration game, this is actually a non-trivial boost. But the full agent, that's the blue one, right? We use 32 versions of betas and gammas. We use retrace, and we use the extrinsic reward. So now what we can do, we can consider less number of policies. So if you use just 16, you can see that the results are worse. So actually considering a larger mixture of behavior seems to be working a lot. Now these red and violet ones, what they do is they change the baseline beta. So they change the total explorability of the mixture or of the set of the policies. So this is 0.3, this is 0.5, this is 0.2. So it seems 0.3, it's like a very good choice, much better than the neighboring values. Now this brown thing is without the R&D. So we are using the episodic novelty module, but not the novelty across the episode. So we forget everything once the new episode starts, which you can see gives, once again, considerably worse results. And the last thing which we didn't talk about yet is the orange one, which I will just skip. But with the NGU, you can see that we get to this is like human normalized score. So we got to 1.6 times as what the humans did on average in these hard exploration games. So these are like the basic ablations to show what the different components do. Now let's have a look here on the overall on different set of ablations. So here we can see what the mean human normalized score and the median human normalized score is. The blue lines are the NGU agent. That's what they proposed. Now this line, that is violet one, right? That's the R2D2. It's not. They don't have two R2D2. Yeah, they don't have the original R2D2 anywhere because it's too low. Okay. Sorry about that. So the blue one is the trained NGU agent. If we just use one policy, right, then that's not really great. So using the full mixture is actually an important thing. What they do have here is the R2D2 with retrace. So R2D2 with retrace means without the extrinsic rewards, right? So you can see that without the intrinsic rewards, without the curiosity driven. So without the curiosity driven, you can see that, well, the results are as they were, so they are bad. So even if the mean normalized score is large, because for some of the games we can get very large scores, when we look at the median, then the median is bad. So we cannot even solve the task very well with this without actually using the curiosity driven learning. When we use it, but we just have one policy, one way of combining the intrinsic and the extrinsic reward, that's the green one, right? The red one is the same as the green one, but without the R&D. So without the long term curiosity driven thing. So even if you look at the numbers, it doesn't look so convincing. This is like the train agent, right? So like when I look at it, it just seemed okay. So it's the results are large, but you can find larger results here. The R2D2 with retrace is better, but here it's tragic. But here it's also good as well. So generate like didn't convince me looking at it from the table, but looking at it from this, it actually shows that there is always somebody better than never give up with 32 combinations, but not anybody who would be consistently better, right? So on average, like looking through all the possibilities, the never give up seems to be to be the winner. And it was able to get the sub to get like state-of-the-art results for some of these environments. So the best baselines were the best solutions available. So for Pitfall, you can see that the NGU was able to get to the better results, and also for the Private Eye, which was with the jumping, guy. And for Venture, they got also good results, but not the full NGU aging, but only some of the subsets. So there are many ablations here, like what the number of the neighbors should be in the KNN, in the episodic novelty module, what the size of the controllable states should be. A lot of like really a lot of things. Which I will not go through all of them because it will be too long, and I still want to talk about one more paper. But let me browse through it quickly. If we want to look at something, these are so different number of neighbors and different number of size of states. It's not really that interesting, I would say. And this is just the retrace. Of course, in the retrace, they use the transformed retrace. I didn't say it explicitly, but the retrace can be formulated using the transformed lit retrace as well, which is exactly what they do here. Like, but it's, as you would expect, we just like compute the inverse whenever we want to get the value. So when we compute the temporal difference in the retrace, whenever we really want to work with the rewards, we need to normalize them, work with them, and then transform them again with this H. It's like obvious thing, I would say. So there are a lot of hyperparameters, lot of results here, and the networks. So maybe this is an interesting thing. So this is the Q network. So it gets states. It generates the Q value estimates for all the actions. So this is what you would expect. That is the LSTM here. Right. And now these are the additional inputs which the Q value had. So you can see that actually they don't generate the results for all possible. They generate the results for all possible actions here. But on the input, they also get the action from the previous time step. They get the extrinsic reward and intrinsic reward separately, and then the beta, which tells us how these should be combined. They no longer get the multiple states at the same time, right? So they don't really get these four frames from the previous time. It's not really important. Once we have the LSTM, we don't need to do it, but that's why they get explicitly the action from the previous time step. So they have like a full information of the actions and the observations. Right here, it's written explicitly because they use dualing networks, right? So they have the V, the advantages. Here is the mean and subtraction of the advantages. There is some convolutional torso here, which extracts the features from the given input. Here is the random network distillation. So what the random network looks like, what the trained network looks like. Here is the embedding network architecture. So like just two same networks for getting the controllable states from the two different from two neighboring states, and then trying to predict what the action was performed to get between these two. Yep. I think that's all that was important to tell you. So, ideas, questions, are your brains exploding, or it seems like a nice idea or something? So I will take it as a good news. nobody objects. So let's spend the last half an hour on the paper, which is... okay, so during training, each agent is simulating the or is the is behaving according to one of these policies, right? So they have 256 agents, and each agent has one of these 32 policies, which means they have like a fixed beta and fixed gamma. And they use agent uses the Q value estimate, which corresponds to this beta and gamma, generates experience, and this experience is then used to train this Q value with this beta. In the Q networks, the policy is defined from the Q network, right? So they also their policy is also influenced by this level of how much you want to use a curiosity driven thing, but not explicitly. So each agent behaves in some way exploratory, which is achieved by like seeing this intrinsic rewards. So if this should be like a highly explorable agent, it gets immediate one-step rewards for visiting states which are novel. So it uses this to compute the reward. So that's one thing, right? In each time step, the reward are being calculated by taking this beta into action, and then the policy is also like parameterized by the beta, and the one step Q value estimate is parameterized by this gamma. These experiences are stored in the buffer, and then when we train, we always generate a batch from the experience with the same beta and same gamma, and train the Q network with this beta and this specific gamma. They also try mixing the experience together, but it doesn't work well. So like mixing the experience without explicitly telling it to the network, right? So they don't do it in the end, and they train batches of policies which are always with the same set of betas and gammas. Yep. So the most important thing is that the reward is being counted by including the beta, which creates like an immediate feedback that something is good or not a good move. And because it motivates novelty, then it encourages exploration, right? Because if you get immediate rewards for visiting new states, then it makes you explore the environment more instead of trying to actually get the real rewards from the environment. Yeah, for the evaluation, of course, we don't care about the intrinsic reward. So in evaluation, we just put zero as the beta. This is actually one of the agents, right? Because the smallest beta is zero, which means just use the original rewards of the environment. So for the evaluation, we just drop this intrinsic curiosity-driven reward, and we hope that because this is also one of the policies which we try to train, that the agent will behave reasonably. You're welcome. Questions are great. So the good thing is that this approach is like a general approach where which was able to solve difficult these hard exploration problems. But the disadvantage was that it decreased the results or didn't achieve great results on the dense exploration game. So the same authors actually wrote a paper just a month later. So they probably implemented everything at the same time, but they prepared the two papers at the same. And for example, this third author, that's the R2D2 author, right? And they came up with like what they called Agent 57, which is an agent which is able to get this superhuman performance on all the games. So here is the full results or the final results. The R2D2 is able to get the superhuman performance on 56 or 51 games. The MuZero on 50. The MuZero has higher averages, but it is not that great in exploration, so it solves one game less than R2D2, as good as you as humans. The Never Give Up agent, you can see, is here, so it's even worse. But it's worse not because of the hard exploration games, but because of the dense exploration games, which it sometimes doesn't achieve as great results as humans. And then this is the Agent 57. So generally, the Agent 57 builds up on the Never Give Up agent. It just adds some new or additional improvements to make sure that the trained agent is actually able to work both in this hard exploration regime and in this sparse exploration regime. So what the differences are? The intrinsic rewards are the same, so I'm not discussing them. But the very important improvement, like there are like I would say two improvements. So the first improvement is that in the previous or in the NGU agent, we trained one Q value estimate, which trained which used this combination of the extrinsic rewards plus beta times the intrinsic reward. But the problem is that, for example, the policies might be quite different whether the intrinsic rewards are being used or not. So the behavior of the network might be dramatically different. They have some illustration in the appendix somewhere, I think, or it's not in the appendix, it's somewhere here. To motivate this, to motivate this change. What they do is they consider the very simple grid world example, which they called a random coin environment. So it's like an empty room with a lot of spaces, and there is a coin. You can see where the coin is. You are placed in some random position, and you can just move. And whenever you get to the coin, you get a reward of plus one. And the episode terminates. So it's like find your way in the maze. Now, the problem is that if you include the intrinsic reward, then the agent doesn't actually want the episode to end, because if the episode ends, then it will get no more intrinsic reward. So it's actually better for the agent to like wander around the room without actually stepping on the coin. But with beta is zero, if you would like to switch off the curiosity driven exploration, then you want to head directly to the coin and stop. And now the original NGU fails, or it's very difficult for it to learn that these two different regimes actually exist. So this you can look at what the return of the NGU actually is in the exploitation and exploration phase. And when the intrinsic reward rate increases, you can see that even the exploitation behavior is crippled by the huge reward size. So if the same network should represent both of these, then it doesn't do a well job. And when it's trained with large enough intrinsic reward weight, then even the exploitation policy is not perfect. So it some of these behavior of, oh, let's go around before we get to the coin, gets leaks even to the exploitation policy. While if we do it the way I will just describe, then we will be able to really model these two different behaviors, two different modes, with a reasonably good precision, or how to say it. And what they do is, instead of having one Q network which combines these two rewards, they train two models. One which is based only on the extrinsic reward, so it predicts only the Q values for the extrinsic rewards, and the second one which computes the Q value estimate for the intrinsic reward. And they say, okay, so for a given beta, our Q value estimate is the Q value estimate for the extrinsic rewards plus beta times the Q value estimate for the intrinsic reward. So even if this seems like a trivial change, it's an important thing, because now we train two different networks, two different policies, like really two different policies. One tries to learn the extrinsic one, like using just the extrinsic rewards, and the other which just tries to learn the intrinsic rewards. And now we do the combination by really multiplying the output of the intrinsic Q value estimates by beta. So both of these networks, they are trained in the same way. They each have their own set of convolutions. Each is using transformed retry loss for itself. So it's like just two different models, which are trained differently, right? Using different rewards. And then when an agent wants to behave with some given beta, it evaluates both of these Q networks, multiply this thing by beta, then it gets these Q value estimates for the given beta, for this combination of an exploration level, and then behaves according to it. Mm-hmm. So this is the first change. They explicitly show that it is actually the same. So if you train one Q network for this reward, or if you train two networks and combining them with beta, then the behavior of the agent should be the same. What is different is that the training two networks is conceptually much more simple, especially because these two regimes with these two different sets of rewards usually induce different behavior, right? So in our previous random coin environment, we can train like a two different regimes. Like one is to go all around without actually stepping on the coin, while the other one is go to the coin and step on it. And then we can combine these two different policies by any level or by any weight as we want later during collecting connection of the experience. So that's one thing. They even we use the transformed Q values, right? So this Q returned by the these two networks, it's actually the transformed version. So ideally, we should also use this transformation. So this combined Q should be untransformed Q for the extrinsic reward, untransformed return for the intrinsic reward, combined, and then transformed again. Right, they do some measurements and they show that if they don't do this, actually, if they just sum these transformed rewards, then it works as well. And because it's easier, they do it. This doesn't mean that they wouldn't transform the insides of the Q value estimates. They do. For the extrinsic rewards, they use the transform Q values, and for the intrinsic rewards, they use the transform Q value. But when they combine them together to this combined Q value, then they just don't bother in using this transformation because it doesn't seem to do anything. There is a graph in appendix H3 which demonstrates this. F GH. Yep, you can see that there are some differences, but generally think that the differences are not that large, so they actually used what they called an identity mix, which means when they sum these Q values for the intrinsic and extrinsic rewards, they use just the identity here, right? So at this point, they just don't do it. So that was just a minor detail. So one thing is that we have two different, like we parameterize networks for two different policies explicitly. And the second thing, what we do is that obviously for different environments, different level of exploration is important, right? It's a good thing to be able to say, okay, I actually want to do a lot of exploration in the Montezuma Revenge, while I want to do very little exploration in, I don't know, Pong or pinball or something, where doing the exploration might hurt the performance. What they do is they come up with a better way how to dynamically choose which way or which level of explorability they actually want to use, both during the final evaluation and during the collection of the experience. So normally the agent had fixed beta and then just used it all the time, but here they propose a way how each agent would choose dynamically which of these exploration levels do they actually want to use. So we will have once again a collection of betas and gammas, but they won't be assigned specifically to a given agent. Instead, they will be selected. And what this is this way, which of these exploratory level we want to choose will probably change during training, right? Because at the beginning, maybe you want to do a lot of exploration, and then later we might do less exploration and more exploitation. So it will be some moving target. Yep. And if we consider, like they say, wide range of values of gammas and betas, and some of these betas, like betas, which will be nearly zero with different versions of gammas, then this will also tune the discount factor on the per task basis. Right? So we use this not just to choose beta, but we do this also to choose gamma. Why is that important? It's important that some environments actually benefit from extremely large discount factors. And by large, I mean nearly one. I don't know if I will find the graphs. Maybe they just say it in the text. For example, the skiing environment, yeah, here it is. The skiing environment is very specific because you get the rewards very far in the future. And it's so far in the future that if your discount is small, like 0.999, still small, then if you do it, then you will not be able to see the rewards which you get only at the end of the episode. Right. So what they do is for a lot of betas, which are very close to zero, they consider some number of gammas. So they use extremely large gamma 0.9999 just for the soul of the skiing environment. Then this 0.997, which is being used in R2D2, 0.99, which has been used a lot. So these three, they are like the various exploitation policies, which that they use beta, which is nearly zero, but it allows to concentrate on a different discounting factor using the same architecture as for choosing the exploration. And then we try to consider different exploration factors, and for them the discount factors are much smaller. So how do we actually choose which exploration level do we want to use? So they use something which they call the meta controller, right? Which will tell each agent which of these policy combination to use. Now it will really get meta. So what they do is they use a non-stationary multi-armed bandit algorithm to do it, right? So choosing the level of exploration is being like choosing an arm, like choosing one of these 32 possible combinations. It means that the agent like chooses one of which one of them it actually wants to play, right? So each agent will have this meta controller, which will estimate on what the extrinsic results look on some given on some given task, if the specific level of exploration is being used. So this is really terrible. So we have got these beta and gamma pairs, and what is the index they use? Vector. Yep. So these are the pairs, and now choosing an arm JK means we are using the kth policy. So the agent at the beginning does the multi-arm bandit selection. It chooses an action K. That means it chooses the kth pair of betas and gammas, and now it behaves for a full episode with this, for this episode, fixed version of beta K, gamma K. After it finishes, it gets the external reward. So this is like a return, like sum of all the rewards while behaving according to this policy in this episode. And then it uses this as a reward in this multi-armed bandits problem in which the kth arm was selected. This changes the statistics in the multi-arm. So next time the multi-arm is going to choose some different action. The problem is that this is ideally we would just go for the UCB. Right, the UCB seems to be the best thing, at least from the point of the synthetic regret, to choose the action. And the problem is that this is actually a non-stationary problem, because the agent develops during the simulations. So does the optimum behavior in choosing the policies. So we need to update the UCB somehow to be non-stationary. So what will we do is we will use like a window sliding UCB, which means, let me show you the equations. They are at the back. So when I say window sliding UCB, then in the UCB, what you do is you argmax the Q value plus the exploration part. And this Q value is normally computed as an average through the whole training until this time. And then you have got some visit counts and some time in this exploration part. So we use a fixed window of something like 1,000 episodes. So these queues are actually computed in that window. And these visits are also computed in this window. So this total number of visits is just ignored because we are just using fixed steps, some number of steps. This number of visiting some specific arm is just computed over this window. Now, because we are forgetting experience, then this formula wouldn't actually work. So what we do is we do an epsilon greedy strategy. So with probability of epsilon, we just do uniform action. But when we want to do the greedy action, we actually do the UCB greedy action, or how to say it. So either we perform as the UCB with the fixed window, or we performed randomly. And this epsilon UCB is actually 0.5. So in half of the time, each agent just chooses whatever action it wants, whatever policy, sorry, it wants, and with 50% chance, it runs UCD to choose actually some policy which seems to be a good thing. Of course, during evaluation, we don't do this UCB thing. Like during evaluation, we just choose the policy where this multi-armed meta-controller thinks will get us the highest extrinsic reward. There is a graph showing how this changes during the training. Generally, the higher the points are, the more exploratory the policies are. So you can see that generally it starts in a large, like a lot of exploration. And after some number of training, it usually diminishes the number, like the exploration level, and concentrating more on the exploitation phase. But the good thing is that this happens like automatically. So these are all the improvements, right? We parameterize the policies better, and we have a meta controller which allows us to dynamically choose the suitable exploration level, and also a discount level, because it's also important. So here is the graph which shows the human normalized score, and it also shows the times where these difficult the last six games to be beaten when they are beaten. So you can see that the Montezuma Revenge gets to be solved quite fast. Pitfall is here. Private Eye, the jumping car, is here. At this point, it learns to actually bring the guns to the guns, which are like 10 screens away, and so on and so on. And this is the skiing part, for which we needed to use this extremely large discount. So the problem with extremely large discount is that it makes the convergence slower. Like the larger the gamma, the smaller the contraction ratio of the operator. So using 0.9999 on all the environments actually make the training not converge on some of these, but for skiing it is actually required. So this way they don't really have to say, oh, for skiing use this one. They just leave the meta control to actually find this out, and the meta control actually learns this automatically. So that's a nice thing. So looking at the results, we still have 6 minutes, great. Here are the results on all the 57 Atari games. But what we do is so we have R2-D2, the original one, MuZero, R2-D2 with retrace, never give up. R2-D2 Bandit, that's R2-D2 with a retrace loss, and with the meta controller. So the meta controller chooses the gamma for us. And this is agent 57. So of course the top line, the kept mean, it means for each task, we compute the human normalized mean, but we cap it to 100%. So 100% means we have at least 100% on all the games, right? So you can see that, well, R2-D2 with or without retrace is like similar. Never Give Up actually helps, because on some of these hard exploratory problems, it improves. R2-D2 with the Bandit actually improves further, and the agent gets this 100, which was our goal. When you look at the mean and the median, then it's a bit different story, because MuZero has the largest mean and the largest median. So the MuZero is good in a sense that it's able to plan in a like long term. So it is able to get like superhuman solutions, which with like substantially higher score. So we can see that compared even to the R2-D2 and Agent 57 and whatever, it's better at planning, both in the mean and the median. But it's actually terrible at these hard exploration games. Like there is nothing motivating some non-trivial exploration in Mu Zero. And so for the 5% of the games, it actually does nothing, right? So for three or so games, or maybe even five games, it really doesn't find any good solution. But once you consider like the games which are like in a sense easier and easier from the exploration point, it gets better and better. The Agent 57 excels at this bottom, so it's great in the long tail in solving the assignments which are like hard exploratory while achieving the mean and median comparable to R2-D2, actually better than R2-D2, right? So given that it started from this, these improvements make sure that our overall performance is the same while considerably improving the behavior on these hard exploration games. Yep. Once again, there are a lot of ablation experiments which shows which components are actually the important ones. Well, there are just two new components, so the answer is both of them, right? This is just the never give up. If we add the separate networks, this blue thing, that's adding the like parametrizing this Q value with two Q networks, one for the intrinsic, one for the extrinsic reward, so it helps, but it doesn't go all the way up. The orange one, on the other hand, is the Bandit multi-arm controller or Bandit meta controller. So we can choose different level of exploration for each agent. And when we combine these together, we really get here to the top. Yeah, so I'm just going to ignore this and this. Yeah, so I think if you want to see more details, then the links to the paper will be available on the course website. The appendix here is very nice, so you can read all the information really about how it should be. So it's, I would say, very detailed paper, which is always a good thing, including also the all the network architectures and these huge lists of hyperparameters. Yep. So, questions? No questions. Everybody is dead. Yeah, there are nice results. They have recomputed many of the algorithms, so you can really see the combinations or the comparisons of the original R2-D2, but with their implementation and the retrace and the never give up and the Agent 57, so you can look and see for which games the agent actually work well, for which it doesn't. Here is like the Mu Zero, so you can see the Mu Zero is actually like very many times it's considerably better. But even the Agent 57 was able to surpass the best scores in some of the assignments. So specifically, there is this Montezuma Revenge, right? Pitfall, Private Eye, these are the hard exploration games. And compared to NGU, it's even better in these usually, because well, it can dynamically choose the good exploratory level. So it makes sense that it's actually better. Yep. So, you have done it. You have got through the whole lecture. So thank you for your attention. There will be no practicals on Wednesday, of course, because the Christmas are coming. So I think it's fair. The AZ quiz assignment is now submittable in Recodex. There are actually large number of agents, I think like six or seven different agents which you will be compared against. So only the simplified or simple heuristic is the one which actually counts in passing or failing the test in Recodec, but you will be able to see how well you do comparing to some different agents. They don't have nice names, they have just code names there, but you will be able to see how well you do, and you will probably find out which one of them are good and which one of them are not. So that's ready. The LSTM Parallactor Critic is still not ready, but I will edit whenever I can. But it has the long deadline, so it should be fine. So anyway, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Well, health to all of you, given the situation. I wish everybody that the situation will get better and it will have like the least effect on you, like, especially if you want to go somewhere abroad to some PhD studies or something. It is like a non-standard situation, but well, keeping fingers crossed for all of you, and thanks for your attention. I'll still be here, so if you have some questions, feel free to ask, but of course, you are welcome to leave if you want to. So bye-bye.